ladies have a different connotation. So they're green in women. I don't know whether to tell you very much about Greenham, because other people will no doubt have told you lots of that. You know, well, that would have been a major thing that people will have talked about. Anyway, I was part of the Greenham Women, and it was mind blowing for me, and for a lot of women too. It really became politically aware of the way, you know, the country is run, and just the way society is formed, really, how militaristic our society is, how patriarchal our society is. And anyway, that was what happened. That all that sort of awakening of awareness was just—I can only say mind-blowing. because all the other, formation, how you thought, was formed by all this other stuff that was out there. I'd never, I was supposed to have been the dutiful little woman at home. And, you know, if you had a clean house and clean windows and everything was lovely, and you had your dinner on the table when your husband came home, you were the perfect housewife. I was brought up with that idea of the 50s of, you know, the perfect little housewife. So that was quite a... And feeling very frustrated within it, thinking, you know, something wrong with you, woman, you know, you're not satisfied here in this sort of environment. You know, you've got everything, so you seem to have everything, but, you know, unrest underneath, just dissatisfied. So meeting these women, and there were a lot of them, you know, we had big gatherings down there where people from all over the place would come and talk, people from the States, people who were, well bedded in feminism and the way of thinking. And then, of course, there were demonstrations to bring the fence down, demonstrations when they wanted 10,000 women to surround the base and to stay for 10 days. And I was one of them that stayed down there for 10 days with them. And we we slept in these old tents that we had, and cooked over the fire, and it just felt great that you were part of them. Decorated the fence with baby clothes and ribbons and all things that were meaningful to us. And it was interesting because there were some British soldiers who were guarding the place as well as American soldiers. The American soldiers, it was an American base, but the American soldiers would never catch your eye. You could never, you know, they would drive out of the gates. And the women too, the American women, you know, who lived on the base, would just drive out to never catch your eye. But if you were on the other side of the base, because we had camps all the way around the base, there were guards the other side of the fence. The British soldiers, you got to chat with them and whatnot, and they'd, you know, give you coal or coal or wood for your fire and whatnot, you know. But very often, so that was a good relationship with the British soldiers, many of them, the women had made good relationships with them. But the American soldiers were quite a different breed, a different mindset altogether. But there were also men on outside of the camp, like young vigilantes who would come and knock the tents down or, you know, take the stuff. And that was why we were down there, so that the women could sleep some of them could sleep in these out of the way camps, and so we would be up watching out for them, and you'd engage in conversation with them, and some of them would listen, some of them were just, you know, completely vicious and just what you know the old thing of football hooliganism. They were that sort of men. Some of them were like that, which is not nice. Anyway, and often their camp would be, you know, the I've forgotten the name of them who would come around and collect, get all the stuff. Bailiffs. It's the county would send in the bailiffs to take away all their goods and food and put the fires out and all that, you know. So you learnt that when the bailiffs were coming, that you would take some burning log and take it somewhere, you know, so that when, as soon as they went, you could get the fire going again and make a drink, or, you know. And you had to go quite a way to get water round the other side of the camp, you know, there was, and carry it, well, we had cars down there, you know, we'd go down in cars. So we'd come with big lorries, big cans of water and whatnot. You had to be careful with water. Yeah. So that was a Greenham thing, which went on for quite a long while. Our women's group didn't stay all the time. We were just doing weekend duties. But we were still part of the, you know, when there was a big event, then some of our women were arrested and had to go to court and, you know, plead what was going on, argue your case.
Looking back, do you feel that the, like, long-term protest achieved what you wanted it to achieve?
I think so. It brought about, it certainly educated an awful lot of women, politicised an awful lot of women, and also not just politicised them, but made other people aware of what was going on at Greenham, because it was in, you know, hidden away. Nobody, you know, it was not advertised that cruise missiles were going to be there or that they were there. That was hidden away. And those weapons were extremely dangerous. You know, so that happened, that people were much more aware. Slowly and slowly the camp disintegrated because women were off doing other things, you know, so... and many of it, many of them still within the peace movement, and you know, still fighting for women's rights. Like we went, I for instance, and many of the women's group went into WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Other people moved into other things, like the campaign against the arms trade, or you know, Women in Black, who still demonstrate in London every Wednesday. You know, so there were other campaigning groups that people moved into, the environmental groups, you know, they moved into those as well. But this was really, I think, the spark that fired an awful lot of women into activity. Anyway, from the Greenham things, we were involved in the miners' strike, you know, at that time. We did demonstrations in London about that, and, you know, had women who came down from Nottinghamshire or various other places, where and from South Wales. We were involved with those women and the miners' strike. And the arms fairs, where the government invites people from other countries to sell arms to them. We were involved in the demonstrations and still are. Many of the women are still go to those fairs and try to stop them all. You know. And the policing there was really quite strong. They tried to keep you well away. And they would photograph you, you know, take a video of you. And, you know, I remember saying to one policeman, I don't know why you're videoing me. I'm not likely to blow you up. You know, we're grandmothers for peace. And so, you know, don't know what my shoes have got to do with it. They'd video all of you, everybody, even your shoes. He said, you know, you need to be challenging the people in the fair, not us. You know, those are the ones who you should be afraid of, not us. Not completely blank. But some of them, when you were on a march somewhere, you know, the police were, some of them would say, yeah, I wish I was with you too. You know, it was they were doing their job, keeping us like off the pavement or making sure that we were safe. That was some of their duty. And some of the policemen were really on your side. But they couldn't say that. They couldn't, you know, I guess they could have done. That's the kitchen being removed from outside. Not my kitchen, but next door. Okay. At this time through the 80s... Okay. Through the 80s as well, we had this woman, Justine Merritt, who had started in the States a little group of things, she had started an embroidery thing that it's a ribbon piece that was a pillowcase size that you embroider or painted or collage anything on it that on this piece of cloth that you couldn't bear to think of as being lost forever if there was a nuclear war. And she had started in a little village, you know, not a village, because they're not called villages, are they? But in a small area. And people were interested in what she was doing. And she was embroidering names of all the people that she loved or had met, tiny babies to older women to whatever. She couldn't bear to think of those people being lost forever. So she started to embroider this. And then people were interested in what she was doing. So she would be invited to go to somewhere else. And it spread and spread. And they had a whole miles and miles of this ribbon piece that they all put together and wrapped it around the Senate building and the Capitol building and the White House and down the reflecting pools in Washington, D.C. And is that right? Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And anyway, we managed to... Thalia Campbell is a woman who makes quilts and banners for the trade unions and for peace activities. She's a great activist with her needle. Anyway, she managed to get hold of some of these pieces and wanted to bring over a man who'd written about it in the foreword to a book that there was called Studs Turtle, and wanted to bring him over and was looking for money. So I said to her, I don't want to bring Studs Turtle, but I will pay for Justine, and I would raise money for Justine to come, the woman who started it. So she said, okay, fine, that's great. So she came and she stayed. I collected money from everywhere, wherever I could. Collected enough money for her fare and for some of her stay in England, because these ribbon pieces that Thalia had managed to obtain from the Peace Museum in the States and from this big, you know, big long ribbon that they had over. She managed to obtain some of those, and the co-op would sponsor various places where it could be shown, demonstrated. And one of the places was the Houses of Parliament. And so Justine was here staying with me, and all these lovely ribbon pieces and whatnot. And we put the they put the demonstration up in Houses of Parliament, and Justine was just thrilled. She cried on the way up the stairs to the room where it was going to be exhibited. A wonderful exhibition. And she came twice. She came another time and stayed with us. But her idea was just wonderful, and there's some lovely pieces available and a booklet about it and various calendars and things. That was 1984, the first visit, and 1992, I think. Certainly 1992 she came. I think that was when the Ribbon Police was in the Houses of Parliament, I believe. Can't remember, but I can check that for you. Do you know when it was?
I think
it wouldn't be in the book. Just pause it a minute, because I can run upstairs. And, well, I could tell you afterwards, couldn't I, when it is.